From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. First comes word that Samoa Air will start charging its airline passengers by their weight to fly. Then word that American employers are eyeing something similar for employees' health insurance. As health care and insurance costs rise, employers increasingly want to know your weight, your blood pressure, your glucose and cholesterol levels. 6 in 10, according to one survey, say they plan to impose penalties on employees who don't take action to improve their health. This hour, On Point, employees under the microscope for employer-subsidized health insurance. You can join us on air or online. Does this sound fair? Inevitable? Wrong? Is this the way to health or to discrimination? And you can go to onpointradio.org or get us at Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us first today from New York is Leslie Kuo, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. You can read her story, When Your Boss Makes You Pay for Being Fat, at our website, onpointradio.org. Leslie, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're writing about a big trend here, as you describe it. 6 in 10 employers surveyed saying they're heading in this direction of penalties. But describe what you mean. You profile Michelin North America, Inc., of course, the tire company, and you say if you want to work at Michelin North America, Inc., that spare tire could cost you. And, of course, you mean inches around the waist. You say employees at the tire maker who have high blood pressure or certain size waistlines, what is it, 35 for women, 40 for men, and up, may have to pay as much as $1,000 more for health care coverage starting next year. How? What's the deal? What are they doing, Leslie?
That's right. I mean, so companies are trying some different approaches. You know, they've spent years giving employees rewards, trying to encourage them to join these wellness programs, and they just haven't gotten the participation rates that they were hoping for. So, you know, it varies from company to company, but Michelin, for example, used to give employees an automatic $600 that they could apply towards their deductibles, and another $400 for doing, you know, the wellness survey and participating in an action plan. This year, they're saying, you know, you're not really going to get the money unless you qualify. So they laid out 5 categories. One of them is waistline, as you mentioned. And if you don't hit the numbers, you're not going to get that credit anymore. So you're going to be paying more than the rest of your colleagues.
So $600 toward deductibles, meaning when you made your visits, Michelin would subsidize even that, or your deductibles, and $400 for participating in wellness programs. But that goes
right
away, what, the blood pressure, glucose, cholesterol, triglycerides, waist size, 35 inches
exactly
for women, 40 for men.
That goes away this year. They have 5 categories, the ones you just listed. If you hit 3 of them, you get $600. If you hit 4, you get $800. And if you hit 5, you get $1,000. Now, if you don't hit any, you can complete a coaching program. So you're going to have to go through some coaching, and you can get, I think, $400 or $450, something like that. So it's a smaller amount of money. But basically, if you're healthy and you hit all of them, you can get the $1,000. If you're not, then, you know, you get 0 or you get the 400 something.
Why is Michelin doing this?
Well, you know, they basically said they tried the voluntary approach. They tried to get people to sign up for the programs, and they tried to get people to participate in their healthy action plan. But, you know, people could basically say, yes, I plan to improve my health. I plan to improve my diet. And there really was no follow-up. There was no way to ensure that they were doing anything. At the same time, their health care costs went up in 2012, you know, it spiked compared to previous years. They were trying to figure out why. There were more emergency room claims and other medical claims in general. So they figured that they had to change something, and they had to motivate people to actually participate. Before, the money was pretty much free. You know, you could just be a good employee and get $600 is what one of the executives told me. So they're really trying to find different ways to motivate employees, and they're trying to figure out whether a potential loss, if they frame it as a loss, is that going to spur employees into action more than a potential reward?
A loss, i.e. a penalty versus an incentive.
Exactly.
Your reporting reminding us that corporate spending on health care is expected to reach on average $12,136 per employee this year. This is getting heavy. This is getting high. And this survey says that 6 in 10 employers are headed in this direction of imposing penalties in the next few years on employees who don't take action to get healthier.
Right, exactly. So there are a couple surveys out there, and one of them says 6 in 10 plan to do this in the next few years. I mean, but whichever survey you look at, employees are going in this direction. There is another survey that says the number of employees that plan to impose penalties will double next year to 36%. So, you know, that's more than one-third of employers who are going to be doing this.
We looked at Michelin. What are some other companies doing, Leslie?
Well, so CVS is going to impose, and this is a straight-out $600 penalty, if employees don't finish their health risk assessments, if they don't submit that information.
What kind of information does that include?
And that would include, again, your cholesterol levels, your body mass index, your weight, your height, you know, information that some people might regard as private. And so if they don't turn that in, they're going to have to pay $600 more. I talked to one hourly employee, CVS employee, who was very upset because she makes $11 an hour. So she doesn't want to turn in her information, but at the same time, she sees, you know, really little choice.
Is it legal for companies to require employees to fork over all this personal medical information, even something as simple as their weight and height?
Yeah, so it is legal. I mean, the current law allows for companies to impose wellness-related penalties as long as the amount doesn't exceed 20% of the total coverage costs. And that amount is actually going to go up, believe it or not, next year under the Affordable Care Act to 30%. So actually, employers can impose even more penalties starting next year than they already are.
So if the average that they spend is over $12,000, we're talking 30% of that. We're into several thousand dollars potentially that could be used as a penalty, more or less?
Used as a penalty, used as a reward, however they want to frame it, but yes.
And employees just have to, when this comes up, they just have to do it or pay the penalty? That's it?
So some of these are voluntary programs, right? So for Michelin, if you decide not to do it, if you decide not to submit your information or, you know, go for the five categories, then you just won't get that $1,000 credit towards your deductible. But, you know, keep in mind a lot of other people are. So you're essentially paying more than your colleagues. And at the same time, companies legally do have to provide an out. So if you are, you know, diabetic or you do have some underlying condition that would just prevent you from reaching these goals, you can apply for a waiver. You can go to the doctor, you know, get an exemption. It's pretty rare. I believe only 2 to 3% of employees actually do get an exemption, but companies legally have to provide an out.
There's Michelin, there's CVS. What else is going on?
So for Honeywell, they introduced a $1,000 penalty if you're considering certain types of surgery. So surgery is very expensive for companies. And if you get a knee or hip replacement or back surgery, that can cost the company a lot of money. So they are introducing a $1,000 penalty if you go through with these kinds of surgeries without consulting a resource that they provide, which basically provides you with, you know, second opinions, more information, laying out all your options before you really go through with the
surgery. What would that consultancy really do? What they say, oh, no, you're not in that much pain, just deal with it, and that's it? That's, you've been consulted?
So basically they say it's not so much as a second opinion as laying out all your options, but, you know, options could include not going through with the surgery, of course. So they used to give employees a $500 reward for consulting this resource, but their participation rate was less than 20%. So now, if you don't consult it, you will get a $1,000 penalty, and participation has shot up to 90%.
And what about the surgeries? Are they doing fewer of them, or can we tell yet?
So far, they said they can't tell. It's too soon, but, you know, hopefully we'll see.
Other penalties out there? Other companies?
From what we hear, you know, a lot of companies are doing this. I talked to Cigna, and, you know, they said this is definitely the trend. And about, you know, companies typically tie between 5 to 10% currently of their healthcare costs to incentives, so that's rewards or penalties. But, you know, Cigna expects that number to grow, especially because the Affordable Care Act is going to raise that cap to 30%. And really, you know, companies, you know, they're trying to get not only the future generation of employees, are trying to get them to maintain their health so that they don't, you know, start developing heart conditions. But they're also trying to get that 20% of the workforce that is driving the 80% of healthcare costs to really get into shape.
What about those Americans, though, those employees? I mean, what about their employability? What about their privacy? What about discrimination? I mean, they may feel really under the gun here.
I mean, so this raises a lot of questions, right, about privacy. You know, when you submit your information to an insurer or a benefits firm, you know, I mean, there have been stories about, you know, your information being leaked or stolen or sold. So a lot of people are concerned about this. You know, employees are concerned about this. I spoke with another CVS employee, and he just has a real issue with giving his private information. And he said that instead of doing that, he's going to start looking for another job. He's taking his wife and his kid and himself off the insurance plan. He's setting aside an emergency fund, you know, for medical emergencies, but he would just rather not submit his personal information.
Good luck to him. I mean, what about down the road? Could, if they can ask for all this stuff, glucose and triglycerides, could they ask for your genome? Could they say, oh, there's a little marker that says you might have, you know, this or that one day?
I mean, that's where this gets really murky, right? So companies are legally allowed to do this right now. But when you start, you know, discriminating against certain groups that might have an underlying condition or inadvertently discriminating, you know, are you singling out obese people, for example? Are you singling out low-income people, you know, or people with less education? I mean, some of these characteristics like high cholesterol and high blood pressure are unique to certain conditions.
Not to mention, if you're in some kind of low-wage job, and some of these companies certainly have them, you know, high-quality food is not that cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the latest response to high healthcare costs. Employers watching your weight, your blood pressure, your cholesterol, and ready to make you pay if they don't like what they see. People talking about a fat penalty and maybe more. Concerns being raised about privacy, discrimination, employability, and, of course, costs. Leslie Kuo has reported on it for The Wall Street Journal. She's with us this hour from New York. This issue of weight is very big in our culture. It's big on the streets. Look around. It's big on TV. NBC's weight loss reality show The Biggest Loser has been a big hit. Its 13th season finale, host Allison Sweeney weighs in Kim Nelson to see if she's lost enough weight to beat Jeremy Britt, who lost 199 pounds. She didn't, and Jeremy Britt was crowned the new Biggest Loser.
Your starting weight was 252 pounds. In order to win $250,000 in the title of The Biggest Loser, you need to have lost more than 128 pounds. Your current weight is...
There you go. We're obsessed. Maybe there's a reason. Employers looking at this. Last month, Mimi Roth of National Action Against Obesity appeared on CNBC's Street Signs about CVS's decision to have employees declare their weight by May 1st. She said poor health may well cost people their careers.
Obesity has made it everyone's business. It's not just costing raises, it's costing jobs. Corporate America should not be carrying the weight of employee obesity. Obesity, it's related to lifestyle choice. And just like they say we maybe don't want smokers, you saw the Cleveland Clinic say maybe we don't want to hire obese people. That's where we are.
Are we? Corporate America should not be carrying the weight of employee obesity. Here we go. We'll hear in just a moment from Helen Darling and Uwe Reinhardt. Let me get a couple of callers in here. Ron in Sumter, South Carolina. Ron, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Tom, thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I've been waiting for this. I'm a 53-year-old. I'm a nurse in South Carolina. And anyone who knows me knows I run at work. I've been doing it all my life. I have good blood pressure and good all my comorbidities. I don't have any comorbidities.
Okay.
High blood pressure is preventable. We all, especially in today's healthcare climate with the cost, the exponential, people, we all absorb the cost of people who don't stay fit. I mean, I think it's very selfish, especially in today's climate with Medicare and all the changes. If we had done this years ago, we would not have the dilemma in the healthcare industry.
But you know, Ron, for some people it's not so easy. I mean, what if they show up for the job and they're getting sized up based on their size, not their skills? Is that fair?
It's the costs are so high now. It's going to wipe out the system if we don't do something. And I think it's quite reasonable. We have to take responsibility for our health. I actually don't think someone should have to make somebody lose weight. You look in the mirror, you know you have high blood pressure. You know it correlates to diabetes. I mean,
so just do it, and yet millions of us don't. But you're on the front line, Ron. You see it as a nurse there. I appreciate your perspective. We hear it loud and clear. Thanks for calling. Let me get one more right here. Ozark, Alabama. Dave is calling. Dave, you're on.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think this issue is kind of really unfair. And the reason why I say that, I'm working with an employee, and I've been employed there for a little over 28 years.
Okay.
And I'm in excellent shape.
Yeah.
However, my spouse, some unforeseen things happened to her, and she got in a car accident.
Yeah.
And later she was diagnosed with diabetes. And for years we had tried to get her to get on disability. Unfortunately for us and her, she, you know, her educational background, she really doesn't qualify for that because they say, well, you can go get a management position, even though that's
right.
And what she, make a long story short, what she's have a degree in, a master's degree, and she haven't been that fortunate enough. Getting to my point, I have her on my insurance policy, and when we had the employees had a summary of what we had to do with this new plan, she is subject to all of this too.
Because your employer is going down this road, Dave. They're going this way.
Yes, sir. Because she's on my policy, she got to submit to all of this stuff.
So they want to know her weight, her glucose, all the rest.
Yes, sir.
Are you worried that they're going to penalize you or peel her out of the program?
My concerns is there. I really don't know. I don't know. This is the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Dave, we wish you luck there. I guess that there's evidence, and I appreciate your call, Dave. Leslie Cool, there's evidence that it's happening. I mean, it's at Dave's workplace, and he's worried about his wife.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it does apply to, in a lot of cases, to the spouse as well, who is covered on the plan.
I want to bring Helen Darling in here. She's president of the National Business Group on Health. Joins us from Washington. Helen Darling, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
What do you make of this trend, Helen? Why is it happening?
Well, it's happening for a number of reasons. But first, I'd like to be clear that no data are given to the employers. All information is collected by health professionals who are governed by federal and state law in terms of privacy and protection of the data, and also professional ethics. So the employers don't see the detailed information. But as I think Leslie even talked about a little bit earlier, employers know that we all have to choose to live healthier lifestyles if we're to have higher quality of life and reduce the cost of care for conditions that are preventable, and that's key. And about two-thirds of conditions are preventable, such as not smoking, becoming more active, choosing healthier foods, et cetera, wearing seatbelts. I think Ron from South Carolina certainly noted that a lot can be done by individuals, and employers are trying to help support and make it easier for employees to choose healthier lifestyles. And I would say to Dave in Alabama that his spouse, all she has to do is report information to health professionals and to do activities that are medically appropriate for her. So she has nothing to worry about as long as she takes the steps that are requested. If she's under active care and if she has disabilities, she probably is, then she already has from her physician all the information that would be needed, which would normally maybe be picked up in biometric screening.
But here's Michelin, for example. Leslie's reporting that they want to see for men waistlines under 40 inches, women under 35 inches. That's not so easy for everybody. Some people haven't been there in many, many years. What do they do, Helen?
Well, that's right. In fact, and is also true of Michelin, but all other employers, you always have an option to pursue activities that are agreed to and acceptable to your provider, your physician. They are medically appropriate for you. And most of them, frankly, are very easy things to do, like to provide a health assessment, which is self-report, or through your own physician, or however you want to do it, biometric information, lab values, that kind of thing. And then you talk to a coach. How hard is that? You talk usually on the phone, or it could be online, but whatever it is, it's easy to do. And that individual, that health professional, is working with you to identify steps, easy steps to be quite blunt, that you can do given your circumstances. So, for example, the gentleman from Alabama doesn't need to worry about what his spouse would be doing. It will be relevant to what she can do, and it should be very helpful to all of them, and frankly, to their families, because this is all about trying to help people choose healthier lifestyles. This is for their lives, their quality of life, and for the people that they care about.
Leslie Kuo reports on this new survey, Helen, saying 6 in 10 employers are planning to impose penalties in the next few years on employees who don't take action to improve their health. Do you see this becoming the norm, Helen?
Well, I think the expectation is that given the fact that in total employers and employees are paying over $12,000 a year just for health benefits, we have to do something, number one. And second, it is true, as Leslie said earlier, that most employers who start out trying to provide something that is more like a gift, an award, or a reward of some sort, and that doesn't motivate people, like saying, if you don't do something. And by the way, these are all easy things to do. It may be that if something like blood pressure, all you have to do is be taking steps to reduce your blood pressure. Given the fact that if you don't do that, there's a probability that you'll either have a heart attack or a stroke and be crippled for the rest of your life. This is really about the health of individuals and to help support them to be healthier. It is not to penalize them.
Leslie Kuo, how about that? It's for your own good, dear employee. And as Helen says, don't worry about the information. We're not going to see it. It just goes to the healthcare professionals. Don't worry about privacy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've been keeping tabs on the reader poll that's gone with the story, and it actually seems like most people seem to support these penalties and agree that it is for employees' own good, but not only that, but that it shifts the burden of the cost to the people who are costing more. So again, you know, 20% of the workforce generally accounts for 80% of the healthcare costs. So what I'm hearing from readers and just the feedback I've been getting is along the lines of, yes, if you have to pay more for car insurance if you get into an accident, why shouldn't you have to pay more for health insurance if you're at a higher risk? So far from our poll, it looks like about 65% of our readers actually are in favor of these kinds of penalties, and there are 2,500 people polled so far. But one kind of
Wall Street Journal readers say, bring it on, penalize them.
And look at the comments. I mean, just overwhelmingly in favor of such penalties. You know, people who are healthy, like the caller earlier, and who just don't want to foot the bill anymore for their colleagues. But one thing that I wanted to bring up as well is that, you know, companies have tried rewards. They've tried the nice guy approach. They've tried carrots. You know, one example is General Electric. They allowed researchers to give smokers up to $750 for kicking the habit. This was a few years ago.
Yeah.
And that worked. It tripled their smoking cessation rate to, I think it was 9%. But when it came time for the company to roll out the program, you know, they met with a lot of resistance from employees who said, why should smokers be rewarded? Why are they getting rewarded for their bad behavior?
Interesting.
So, you know, it's not just that companies aren't seeing effects, you know, good effects with rewards. It's also that, you know, employees are feeling that rewards are unfair. Why should you reward unhealthy people for trying to get healthy? And so when it came time for them to roll out the program, they imposed a $625 penalty on smokers instead.
Boy, this is interesting. We're going to dig on into this. It's very interesting to think where this could go. I mean, yeah, when you put it that way, it's just about smoking, maybe okay, but how far does this go? Leslie Kuo, we're grateful for all your reporting on this and for your time today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Leslie Kuo, management reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Helen Darling, please stand by in Washington. Uwe Reinhardt joins us now from Princeton, New Jersey, one of the country's leading authorities on health care economics, professor of political economy, public affairs at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. Uwe Reinhardt, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here today.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. What do you think of this trend? Through these penalties, shifting the burden, as Leslie put it, to people who are costing more. Traditionally, wasn't that what insurance was supposed to help us avoid?
Well, no. Actually, traditionally, insurance is meant to cover you for events over which you have no control. And the things over which you have control, ideally, are not insurable. So what we over the years, however, we use the insurance mechanism to cover all kinds of events, even if those events were triggered by your own behavior. And what these companies are trying to do, and one can understand it, is to roll back towards the idea of more traditional insurance and says, basically tell the employees things that you can control, expenses you could have avoided, we will no longer cover, or if we do cover them, we'll charge you for it, and that's that $1,000 they
won't give
you.
So be fit or be fined.
Yeah, that's a fined. Well, they're actually withholding a reward from them. And it
I mean,
does,
it starts out looking that way, but it looks like a penalty in a hurry if you're on the
it
receiving end.
It is a penalty, but, you know, it's semantics. It depends how you package the language. That really matters.
How does this work, Uwe, though? I mean, let's say you're a cashier. You're making minimum wage. You're
right.
Overweight. You don't have a gym membership. You can't afford it. You don't have a lot of energy after, you know, being on your feet 8 hours a day checking people out at the drugstore. And you're supposed to go out and, like, you know, I don't know, run and do all the rest and be svelte. I mean, you know there's a kind of economic difficulty with this. Not that it's impossible. It's not impossible. It's possible. But it's harder in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing listeners should realize, this is a private market phenomenon, and private markets are not ever about fairness. They are about efficiency. So this sort of thing won't be 100% fair. Companies may try to lean that way, but markets by their very nature are not fair. And yes, this particular person you describe would be penalized in this sense. The companies take this view. A lot of employers think it's actually the company who's paying for that. That economists believe is nonsense. The employer-paid premiums actually get clawed back from the employee's paycheck. So it's really the employee's collective insurance fund. And the arguments employers make is it doesn't seem fair that people who don't look after themselves dip more deeply into this fund than others who do look after themselves. So you could see where employers think this is actually fair. The downside, of course, are the slippery slope issues you raised and others raised. Where will this end? You know, how much of your personal information do you ultimately have to reveal? And then how secret will that actually stay? Even if it's professionals, as Helen says, and insurance companies trade this information among themselves. How easy would it be that such information can get tapped into or get lost on a CD? And that's worrisome, our privacy.
We've certainly seen that happen. I mean, Helen, can you picture down the road, you know, your employee wants your whole genome where they can see all your health propensities one way and another? Is that possible, Helen?
No, I don't think it is. I think that they're governed by privacy rules and professional ethics.
But if they can ask for your glucose levels and triglycerides, and you know, what's the difference?
But they don't get them. That's the point.
Even the insurance company, they're going to say, turn your genome over to our insurer, and we'll see, then we'll talk.
But you keep talking about obesity as examples, and anyone can see if someone's obese. If this information and these activities were aimed at discrimination, it would already happen.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the latest response to high health care costs. Employers watching your weight, your blood pressure, your cholesterol, and ready to make you pay if they don't like what they see. People talking about a fat penalty and maybe more. Concerns being raised about privacy, discrimination, employability, but also right alongside that about the way we live and what the cost of it can be in health care terms. Helen Darling is with us from the National Business Group on Health. She's president there with us from Washington. Uwe Reinhardt's here from Princeton, New Jersey, big leading national authority on healthcare economics. And Helen, Uwe, lots of response here online. Margie is among many who are saying, yeah, let's do this. She says, I work hard to educate myself and keep myself healthy. I resent subsidizing people who don't. James puts responsibility slightly elsewhere. He says, send the bill to Kraft, ConAgra, Coke, and McDonald's. Steve says no. BMI, body mass index, is an antiquated, simplistic measure dating back to the 40s. When we changed our definition of BMI-based obesity, we created tens of millions of overweight people overnight. Instant epidemic. Hating heavy people is a socially accepted bias that's also gendered. Women get it worse than men. And Clay Uva says, you can't make a blanket assumption that because someone is overweight, that they will automatically have more health problems and drive up health costs. What about that, Uva?
Well, that's certainly true in any actuarial calculation. They are always based on averages, and they do not apply necessarily to the individual. But that is how actuaries work. They know, on average, people who are obese cost a company more, and they have very precise estimates. But it is true, they are on average. Every individual isn't like the average. And that's, however, how we price health insurance. So the gentleman has a point, but that is, in a way, not how we price health insurance or how employers look at it. They look at averages.
Let's go to our listeners, Judy in Boston. Judy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a background in health behavior and health education, and I'm fully aware of the fact that roughly 50% of disease is preventable. I think my concern about this conversation is an oversimplification about how people make choices regarding their health behavior. It's not enough to know that smoking is bad for you, that it's bad to be overweight, but we have to look at things like, for example, most obesity starts at 3 years old. So people are being brought up in an environment in which they're learning how to eat in ways that are potentially inappropriate. But there's also this whole other thing that I think one of your email people mentioned, mentioned is the notion that our farm bill, which was written in the Nixon administration, is dumping hundreds of millions of dollars to subsidize corn, which makes it really, really cheap to buy 4 gallons of soda and really expensive to buy low-fat or fat-free milk. So people who don't have money, it's cheaper for them to buy products that are less healthy because of the way that we're structured, because of the way it's structured. You know, they may be working 2 or 3 jobs to try, you know, so where are they going to find the time to exercise? Do they even have safe neighborhoods that they can walk from the bus to their home? Can their kids go outside and exercise in those neighborhoods? So I'm a little concerned, and I get it, because, you know, I exercise and I do all the right things, but I'm middle class. And I grew up middle class, and I'm raising my daughter to eat healthy, but I'm fortunate. And I think we're really overlooking that the role of the environment that the government is playing and whether or not they're giving money away to ConAgra and the like.
Judy, we've got it. You're saying if we want to think systemically here, let's back up a little further, look at even a bigger picture. I'll take that to Helen and Uva. Let me get one more first. Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah,
until your last, the last caller, I really felt like this conversation, the fulcrum of the seesaw of this conversation, was way, way over on one side.
Well, we're looking at what's coming and trying to examine it here. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Right. Well, I think, you know, I mean, let me also say that I'm not calling as somebody who's obese, but I think that it's really important not to blame the victim. And I think that let's look at the profit of health insurance companies. You know, it'd be interesting to have those facts in this discussion. I'm not worried about their profits. What I'm worried about is that we are blaming the victim, that, you know, as your previous caller said, it's a systemic cultural problem. And, you know, if we want to make more money, if we want to save money, if the health insurance companies want to save money, why don't they take some of the profits from Frito-Lay, from the advertising companies that literally shove this stuff, the sugar, the fats, down people's throats? We're living in a society now where there's more stress than there's been for the last 50 years. People have to do something with that. If you have no other choice, you're going to use cheap food. And because you're working 3 jobs or unemployed and can't get a job at all and you're depressed, you're not going to be able to do the Pilates classes to run
them. I hear it loud and clear, Elizabeth. You make the point well. Judy does as well. Helen, thank you, Elizabeth. Helen, I'll come to you, but Helen, let me come to you first. I mean, what about it? If we want to back up here, look at the whole system. Are we blaming the victim here? Should we be looking at, they've got cultural issues, you've got political issues, big subsidies for big food, which isn't necessarily very healthy at all, contributing to this? Should it all come down on the on the end user?
All of these programs include help, as was described by both Judy and the other
Elizabeth.
Lady. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth, thank you. Both Judy and Elizabeth talked about all the factors that affect how people live their lives. The purpose of these programs is first and foremost to help people to understand, in a sense, what's their baseline, where are they, and to understand that this isn't just about it'd be nice to look nicer. What you really want to do is to be healthier. So the coaches, the nutritionists, these programs include activities that are aimed at dealing with exactly what they were talking about. They're not just out there saying, you know, go on, we're going to penalize you if you don't do certain things. What we're saying is, if you engage in these activities that will help you deal with all the things you're talking about, including, for example, stress and depression.
But Judy and Elizabeth are saying, look, a program like that may be just a straw in the wind, in the hurricane of all this, you know, junk food and cultural circumstances. Can a program like that really stand up against all that? Is that program going to go and lobby against subsidies for foods that may help people become obese?
Well, that's not what the programs do, but the programs do, like Weight Watchers, help the individual. This is all about how individuals live their lives within the complex environment that we're in.
Yeah.
So this whole initiative is aimed at helping people to be able to mitigate the risks that they have, including understanding and getting help for everything they're dealing with. For example, employee assistance programs are available. And by the way, most all of our members, for example, are self-insured. So there's no insurance company profit.
It's the savings right to the individual corporation, you're saying.
Right. And so they are providing services, that mental health services, employee assistance program, all sorts of things. So most of them have connections. So, for example, if an individual is in a conversation with a coach and a nutritionist, and that individual clearly begins to sound like in one way or another that depression or stress or any of those things are problems, they will get a referral, in many instances, a so-called warm transfer to a program, again, all health professionals, that will help them deal with what they're dealing with, whether it's stress, whether it's they're the sandwich generation, where they've got little kids and they've got
no matter what. Yeah, Helen, I hear you. You know, it sounds like Moonlight and Magnolia, but we know that these things are tougher and grittier and not necessarily also charming and helpful in reality sometimes.
It may not be charming, but it is helpful. If you're getting help, if you're getting referrals to childcare or referrals to mental health services, you're getting help. Sometimes this would be a circumstance that would actually trigger the best help you could ever get.
Uva, what about it? If we're talking systemically here, maybe the system's shifting to put, let's say, the weight on the overweight, for one. You know, what about the bigger systemic issues here that our callers are raising? What about the food we subsidize and promote? What about the circumstances in which people are living, which may not make it so easy to go out and have a nice 3-mile jog after work?
Well, certainly one should put a tax on foods that are not healthy for you. That's almost like an economist could easily defend that on efficiency grounds. The problem is, of course, that the food industry is a major shareholder in the Congress, and it's extremely difficult to get such legislation done, even on sugar. We subsidize, sugar not. We have a quota against it. So we accidentally do the right thing on sugar. But the other theme is that somehow we're blaming the victim, and there may be something to that. It may be true that healthy food is more expensive, although I kind of doubt that, than food that is not healthy.
I mean, we all know about vegetable deserts in inner cities. We've heard plenty about that over the years.
That may be, yes, that's certainly true. And there maybe one could do systemically something that, say, Mayor Bloomberg should make sure that these things are available in the inner city. But, for example, when you go to the meat counter, I'm always shocked how expensive meat is. We don't eat much meat. But when my wife travels, I sometimes sneak and get a steak. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The kind of
things
naughty boys
do.
Yes. And then I'm always shocked how expensive meat is. So anyone who buys meat at all seems to me to have very little excuse that they don't have money for anything.
Meat comes with issues, but of course so do Fritos. Kathy in Montgomery, Alabama. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi. My problem is I think the employers need to take some responsibility. I was in a high-risk job where a lot of people were getting sick. I had to retire early. I think the employers need to have a responsibility for some of what they do as well.
Yeah, so you feel like you are already carrying a fair amount of the overall burden of health consequences.
That's right.
Thank you, Kathy. Uba?
I just don't understand. I, first of all, don't like the idea that employers ever intruded into health insurance and health care. Helen knows that.
But they have for a long time in this country.
I've been a foe of that because it leads to this kind of paternalism or maternalism that we now have and that some Americans resent. I don't really think employers have any responsibility to keep their employees healthy. Their responsibility
let's just stop right there,
make them sick.
But Kathy's, maybe that's where you're going, but Kathy's saying, look, her job itself could contribute to ill health. So, you know, many jobs aren't sitting at Princeton, as you well know, Uba.
That's tough. That is true, but that is, of course, the way markets work. I mean, the way we teach it is to say if somebody does take jobs that are more dangerous, they also get compensating wage increases for that or should.
Yeah, well, where are those?
But
lately?
Somehow to hold an employer responsible for everything that happens to employees, I don't know that you can actually operate an economy that way. There, I would say Americans should sometimes maybe have more respect for their government. I find it odd that a nation would have so little trust and respect for their government but fully throw themselves onto the mercy of employers. That's, to a European like me, an extremely strange spectacle.
You're kind of leaning towards single-payer insurance there, another turn
of
the wheel.
Not necessarily single-payer, but certainly have more faith in government in looking after your health rather than some employer who should be making widgets and competing with the Chinese. You know, the employers have a tough enough time competing in the global market. They shouldn't also have to act as parents for their employees.
Well, things are changing. Here's one way they may be changing. Mary in Boston is calling. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is a fabulous program you have today. And I just want to say, in my strong opinion, I don't think there are victims. And no one has a gun pointed to their head. I think, you know, folks should stop blaming someone else, whether it's a company, whatever. We all have the same exposure to junk food on the market. We can shop the perimeters of the grocery stores. We all know that's the healthiest way. And sometimes the least expensive way, because junk food is not cheap either. And a bag of apples, there are things like beans and all sorts of produces and things that can go a long way to helping a person stay healthy. I'm not wealthy, but I'm very fit and trim, and I work at it. I have to have the discipline, and I exercise that. I think altering vending machines in schools for the young folks who maybe aren't quite as knowledgeable, they don't have to, you know, get rid of them, but they can replace them with lots of healthier options. And I think we're kind of moving in that direction.
Mary, I take your point. Absolutely. I mean, people need to be very health aware. These are our lives, after all, and there are costs attendant with it. On the other hand, Mary, I mean, when was the last time, you know, you rushed away from a job as a cashier to run out and get a couple of cheeseburgers for a buck at McDonald's because that was close and cheap and what you had time for? You know, some people live in that circumstance.
Indeed. I think I've always packed my own lunch, and at home you always have healthier options.
Mary, I appreciate your call. Helen, where do you think this is going? 6 in 10, that's a lot of employers saying within the next few years they will impose penalties on employees who don't take action to improve their health. That sounds like this could become the norm.
Well, I think it is the norm. It will become the norm. And when you think about what employers and employees are paying in total, something has to give. In fact, it's the employees. We now estimate that in 2013 that nearly 37% of the total cost of care in a given year, in 2013, will be paid for by the employees in their contribution and their out-of-pocket costs. So to get back to your example about the checker, you know, that individual has a chance to reduce his or her own cost by taking these steps. And all they have to do is pursue the activities and do everything they can to change their lives, quit smoking, whatever it is. And that's not a lot to ask. And it's good for them. It's good for the total cost of care. It also will enable us to have the resources, as Uwe said earlier about insurance. You know, there are some very serious problems that are very costly. We now have a lot of new specialty drugs, which cost like hundreds of thousands of dollars in a year. And we won't have budgetary room to pay for those if we keep paying for all these things over which somebody has control. We have to take care of the people for which it is a true insurable event.
Costs and more. Changing attitudes are putting us on new territory here. Listeners, consider this hour a full heads up. Lots of implications. I'm grateful to all of our guests for helping us look at them. Helen Darling with the National Business Group on Health. Helen, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Tom.
Uwe Reinhardt at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School. Uwe, thank you for joining us. Always great to hear from you.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, there's a very lively conversation at our website, Facebook, Twitter. Check it all out. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.